My name is Petter Reinholdsen, and I'm very pleased to welcome you to the monthly Noob meeting. After the meeting, we will go somewhere for socializing, probably find something to eat. So please join us if you want to. This meeting, we have been lucky to be able to get a person doing a PhD on free software release management in the Cambridge. He is previously the Debian project leader. He has been involved in quite a lot of free software projects, and was previously the press manager of Linux International, I think. Something like that. And also been visiting Norway once before to join DebConf in 2003. So I urge you to welcome Martin Michelmeier.
So first of all, I should probably say that it's a fairly long talk. I've given it twice now, and it has always been about an hour. And I tried to cut it down, but it seems the last one I gave it became even longer. But I hear that we only have 90 minutes. No, I'm not going to take so long. I'm hungry anyway. But it might take a while. But I think it's a really fascinating topic. It's something, well, I need to say that because it's something I spent about 3.5 years on doing my PhD, which I'm about to finish. But I really think it is interesting. It's about release management in large free software projects, looking at it from a quality point of view, see what kind of problems are there and what can be done about them. So I would just briefly show what I'm talking about. I'm starting with the background of this research, where I'm coming from and what kind of questions I was actually asking. And during this research, I looked at 7 different free software projects, and I will first of all mention the project selection, why I chose those projects, and then I will describe for each of those projects, I would describe what kind of problems they faced related to release management, and what kind of solutions they implemented. And then for a large chunk of this talk, I will speak about time-based release management, which is sort of a new strategy of making releases. After explaining why time-based releases work, at least for some projects, I will look at some implementation questions which projects have to think about if they're interested in moving to time-based releases. And in the end, it's interesting for the community. I think, and that's something I should mention, is that many PhD theses, like research, gets theory, and no one basically looks at it. I think what I'm doing here is actually, it's really solving a problem which we have in the community. So I think it's really something which we need to talk about, and I think that the findings from the results are quite interesting, which is why I'm quite happy to talk about it and usually take much longer than I should. So when I started my research, I was interested in quality questions. We're always saying that free software is so great, and we certainly have achieved a lot, but I'm always looking at the other side and see that there are still problems. Even if something's going really well, you can always improve things. And I wanted to look at free software projects and see what kind of problems there are, and then ideally solve all of them. In the end, I realized that's not going to happen in 3 years, and I decided to focus on release management because that's a very problematic area. But what I'm mainly interested in, because you can see quality from many different perspectives, what I'm interested in is sort of the management or coordination side. How can you coordinate or have a free software project with hundreds of people all around the world and have high quality, because that's not given that that's going to happen, especially the problem with volunteers. You don't know what work a volunteer is going to do. Maybe they will fix that bug, but maybe they won't have time, or maybe they're not interested in fixing that bug. And basically with volunteers, you don't really know what kind of work they're going to do. And the question for me is, well, if you have a project that consists of volunteers, how can you ensure high levels of quality? And that's something, if you look at software engineering, it's always that if you have quality, it has to be high all the time. You can't have high quality today and then tomorrow, well, maybe not, or you don't know. You always, quality has to be high. But with volunteers, their involvement changes all the time. So the question is how, or can you have high quality levels with volunteer teams? That's the sort of the fundamental question which I was asking. And I'm trying to improve the process, how those people work together. And so like I said, I specifically focused on release management because that's a big area of concern. So in terms of the projects, when I started my research, I looked at many different projects just to see what's out there, what kind of quality problems are there. And I found many problems, but in the end, I had to focus on specific questions and a specific area, specific projects. I couldn't do everything. In the end, I decided to look at large free software projects. So in terms of release management, small and large projects have very different problems. The basic problem with small projects is basically a problem of human resources, that they simply don't have enough manpower to do what they would like to do, to implement those features, to actually test the software and get it out there. But for large projects, it's a very different problem. The problem there is during the release, in terms of for the release preparations, well, how do you coordinate hundreds of people to actually get their work done on time and at the same time? Because at the beginning, you have all these individual developers working on their particular feature or interest. And at some point, you say all of you, hundreds of people, have to come together and put the work into the main line and do it at the same time and get it done at the same time. And that's a really big coordination problem. You can't put the people into a room, which is one of the next things distributed. It's much, I mentioned before, the voluntary aspect, which is listed here as well. And the distributed aspect, they really play together as well. It really makes it hard, because if you have volunteers, and in my work I defined a volunteer very loosely, not in terms of whether they receive payment for their work, but whether the project has control over that person. So if I as a project can tell a volunteer, you have to do this work, because maybe the project pays them, then I have control over those volunteers. But for most people, the project doesn't have any control. People, if they don't want to fix bugs, if they prefer implementing yet another feature, there is nothing you can do. And even for people who are paid by a company, by IBM or Intel, you can't tell them what to do, because you know IBM tells them you have to work on this. You might be able to ask IBM, please, we need to fix those features, can we have some manpower? But in the end, it's not up for the project to decide what will happen with those people, which means during the release management, it's very hard, because if there's a task, you can't tell people to do it. So that's a voluntary aspect, and the distributed one is because of that coordination problem. If we could put all the people into a room, you can tell people you will do this task and you have to fix this bug, and we will only leave this room once we agree. But in a distributed project, that doesn't work. It's much harder. You can have discussions on the mailing list, which sometimes don't go anywhere. So it really makes that coordination hard, which you can see during release management. And the last point is that I was looking at time-based release management. So I was looking at projects which were either currently moving to time-based releases or which implemented time-based releases already. So what is time-based release management? The basic idea in sort of traditional software development and release management is that it was feature-driven. Companies had a software product which they sold in a shop. So people would go there, they would give shell out some money, and then they would buy the product. And for that, you really needed new features for every release, because people needed some kind of reason to pay that money. So you had to have good new features, like killer features, into new releases. And that's basically how software development was done. Once we achieve those features, we will make a release. Time-based, on the other hand, doesn't talk about features in terms of the release. It basically says we will make a release according to a specific time interval. So we will make a release on this day, maybe in 6 months or in 12 months. And the schedule is based around that on that release date. And then people can simply go off, and whatever gets done until that release date or a few weeks before, so you can actually test it, gets included, and what doesn't get included has to wait until the next date, which again is clearly announced. So here are the 7 projects which I looked at. So they're all large projects, free software projects, which are either moving to time-based or have implemented it. So some of you may ask, well, but Debian GCC doesn't really release according to time. So what's listed here is they don't meet that interval which is listed here. So what's listed here is basically the theory. In practice, it might be different. But that's what they are aiming to do. So there are quite a few projects which are aiming to make a new release every 6 months. And some of them, like GNOME, achieve that, various others don't. You might also argue that some of them aren't time-based. So Debian, some people might say that's not time-based, but in the last release, Debian is really moving to time-based release, and I will talk about that in more detail later. Then GCC, in theory, it has a release every 6 months. In practice, it's about one every year. So practice and theory is different, obviously. The other thing is that the Linux kernel is quite different, because most projects, their strategy is to make a release every n months, so 6 months or 3 months. But for the Linux kernel, it's different, and I classify them as time-based, because after they make a release, they have a 2-week what they call merge window, in which new features get incorporated, and after that 2-week merge window, they only make bug fixes until it's stable enough to be released. So it varies how often they actually make a release, but they are time-based because of that merge window. OpenOffice is currently moving from 3 months to 6 months. So what I'm doing now for each of those 7 projects, I will briefly discuss what kind of problems they faced in the past related to release management and what kind of solutions they implemented. And in the end, I will see what kind of common problems there are. So for each project, I will first show a listing of releases, just to show how often they actually make releases. So Debian, you can see in the past there were quite regular releases, and then things slowed down, most probably because Debian became much larger and more complex. And with 3.1, which I'm sure many know here, it was like a disaster, because it was so delayed. It was like delayed for like more than a year, and it was really horrible. But things have improved since then. So what are the problems? So I think the crucial problem is that release management was not organized. for example, there were very infrequent release updates. People simply didn't know what was going on. So at some point, the release manager sent an email and said, basically, I think we should release in 2 or 3 months. And people said, all right, you're kidding. And obviously, they didn't make it. Another problem was that blockers were found very late during the release. And that's partly because it was so unorganized. That suddenly they realized, we don't actually have the infrastructure to make security updates or things like that. Another problem was delays, and that's partly because of those blockers. People thought, we are right on track, let's freeze the whole software, so you can't make any changes anymore, only bug fixes, because we're really close. But then it took another year. And so when the software was actually released, it was very out of date. And of course, the old version was really out of date as well. So in the end, because of those problems, there was a very bad image for the project. It has a reputation for being slow, not delivering. But fortunately, a number of things have been done to fix those problems. And even though it's not perfect yet, I think there have been many improvements. First of all, the whole release management and the structures have been improved. So Debian moved away from having one release manager to having a release manager with assistants to then having more release managements and assistants. And for the first time ever, a release target was set in advance. So when 3.1 was released, the release manager said, we want to release 4.0 at the end of 2006, which didn't happen, but still it wasn't like as much as a disaster as the previous release. And for the first time there was a clear goal, people knew what was going on, and that was helped because there were regular release announcements and updates, people knew what was going on. Another thing is that there was a new definition of release targets. In the past it wasn't clear whether we needed to wait for something or whether there was just something which would be nice but we don't have to wait for it. And now there is a split between blockers and goals, and if a goal isn't met, it's not, we don't have to wait for it. It would be nice to have it, but no one's going to wait for it. And one thing also is a clarification of responsibilities. In the past, again, when there were problems, often no one said that they were responsible, so it was up to the release managers to find people to perform those tasks. And now it's much clearer who is actually responsible, and if something breaks, it's much easier for the release managers to say, well, you're responsible, you have to fix it. I think the biggest outstanding problem is that cultural problem, that because of years of delays, many people within the project don't actually think that Debian as a project can release on time or that deadlines are real, because always in the past when deadlines were posted, people simply knew that, you know, no one's gonna everyone's gonna ignore them, and that's not the case anymore, but people have to see that, and there has to be some kind of cultural shift. So the next project is GCC, which in theory has a release every 6 months. In practice, in the last few years, there is about one release every year. A big problem in the past was that the whole development was very closed, that there was a very long time between releases and no snapshots were available to the public, so no one really knew what was going on, no one could test the software, it was really pretty bad. But then there was a fork of GCC, which later became the official version. So when that development picked up, a problem was that because of all the development tree was broken fairly often, which is a problem, especially with time-based releases, because if the development tree is broken, well, you can't release it. but it's also a problem because if it's broken, no one can test it, no one can develop it. So the solution, well, first of all, that fork helped to open up development. A steering committee was established, which can appoint new maintainers and things like that. One thing in terms of the release management, which is interesting, is that GCC divided their development into three stages. So in the first stage, you can make major changes, whereas in the last change, it's only for bug fixes and documentation updates. And I think that's a really good idea. And what GCC also does is that for the stage one, you need to write up a proposal for the changes you want to make, and they need to be approved by the release manager. And patches are peer-reviewed, which means that development is broken less often. Some of the outstanding problems, I think the biggest one is simply that the release manager is busy. And as a result of that, he hasn't pushed the release forward as much as possible. So 4.2 should have been published last year, and it's still not out, although now it seems to be getting close. But it's mostly because in the last few weeks the release manager became active again and looked at the bugs and told specific people, can you please fix those bugs? And that actually gets work done. And another question is the branch criteria is, when should you actually make a release? If a bug has been there in the last release, should that actually keep the new release from being released? Which at the moment is the case, but some people argue that shouldn't be the case. GNOME is a really interesting example, simply because nowadays it's doing release management really great. But it's interesting also because in the old days, in the 1.x days, it has faced big problems and many problems similar to other projects. So you can see that there were releases and 2.0 was delayed. And after that, they implemented time-based releases, and since then, it's just beautiful. I mean, they really release on time, and they're a volunteer project, which is really big as well. So the past problem with 2.0 was that they were supposed to change only internal interfaces, basically port GNOME to new API, but it was delayed. And so after many months, people said, well, if we ship GNOME now and people are not going to see any difference, you know, that would be real horrible. So now we need to actually implement some new features so we can show users that we really did something. But obviously that means that there are further delays. So there was really lots of developer frustration. It wasn't clear what was going on. Like the release manager said, yeah, we're really close, we are freezing the code, but then things didn't turn out as expected, and the release never happened. And another problem was that vendors, like Red Hat, which wanted to ship GNOME, didn't really know which version to use, because they simply didn't know when the new version would be out. So they had to use old versions and implement new features on the old version. So the solutions which they implemented is, first of all, a rigorous schedule based on time-based releases with 6 months, with a 6 month interval, and good policies. The other thing they introduced is the idea of reverting, that if a feature is not ready, you can take it out again, or at least threaten to take it out unless it's fixed. And GNOME really gained lots of credibility because they said, we will move to that fixed interval. And they did it. They managed to release on time. And not only once, but several times. I mean, now GNOME is really known for their very predictable release cycle. A problem, or at least a potential problem, is that there are some concerns whether this time-based release strategy, which is really good for incremental updates, you get an update every 6 months, which is great, but some people say, that it might be stopping innovation, that it because it's very hard to make large changes which take longer than 6 months. And to some degree that's an open question, but I think the majority of developers think that it's not really a serious problem because you don't have to implement a feature within one release interval. You can simply do it on a branch and then take two intervals and then integrate it back. But there is this question of whether time-based releases is suitable for like major development, if you want to change like the whole thing, like all interfaces. Then the Linux kernel, I've only listed the traditional stable releases here, so we have 2.6 things changed. But you can see here that there was a long time between releases, 35 months, that's like ages. And because of those long release cycles, many changes accumulated, and those changes weren't tested by anyone because people don't touch development releases. So when they tried to make a new version, it was very hard to get it stable because there were so many changes. The other problem was that features didn't get out. If you implemented something at the beginning, it would take up to 35 months to actually get to people, and it's very frustrating. And because of those long cycles, vendors had to packboard features or hardware support to older releases, which is obviously time they couldn't spend on new feature development. So with 2.6, they radically changed the whole development and release processes, and now releases are done every 2 or 3 months. And the idea is that even though it's a stable series, you can remove features, you can change interfaces. So it's quite radical, but the kernel developers say that it's working very well, but it's quite, not everyone agrees with that. But certainly what's happening is that the new code gets into production very quickly and gets tested. The other thing is that features get out very quickly. So if you implement something now, within 2 or 3 months, it might be in a stable version, which is very nice. And the other thing is that now vendors can actually work with the community. There's like one central point where everyone can work together. But there are some criticism as well. So one problem is that there isn't really a long-term stable version. So I know that Adrian Bunk has Davis current is supporting one based on 2.6.16, but it's not clear how well, how many people actually use it. The other problem is it's only done by one person, and it's not supported by the whole kernel community. And the other problem is, even though so there are many new releases, code gets out, new features, but the problem is it's not only new features, it's also new bugs, new regressions. It doesn't work on old hardware, which it used to support, and things like that. And that's a serious problem, which Andrew Morton always talks about, and basically every other kernel developer ignores him and says everything's working so fine. So there are some users who think that the regression rate is really bad, but at the moment very little is actually done about it. Then there is OpenOffice, which is interesting, because it came from a very commercial environment. It used to be a proprietary application before it was bought by Sun. And even now, even though it's open source, it's still very heavily dominated by Sun, which have a commercial product, Star Office, based on it. And they used to have a release cycle of 18 months, because that's good for Star Office, basically. As you can see, the 2.0 release was delayed, so it should have been 18, it was 26. And after that, they decided to go with a release every 3 months. So again, because of those long release cycles, there was very little testing, many changes accumulated. One problem was that they implemented features even during the beta cycle, and that was probably because Sun said, but we need this feature in Star Office, so we need to get it into OpenOffice first. And what happened was that because 2.0 was delayed so much, is that some vendors actually ended up shipping a pre-version of 2.0, which isn't great. So the project moved to a 3-month release cycle, which allowed them to have a much stronger feedback loop with users. So if they get a bug report now, it's actually useful compared to a bug report software which is like 1.5 years old or older. The other thing, they have more planning, and it allows them to work together with different different parties like Novell, instead of backporting features to something, they can actually work on the mainline development. Motivation has also increased, so they have seen that because things get released more often, people are happier. And what they also did is they made the release process more transparent. One problem was that basically the release people are paid by Sun, and loads of things were decided internally, and now they're trying to open up so other people can actually get involved. An outstanding problem is that they found, after moving to 3 monthly releases, that it's actually too fast for them, because of 2 reasons. First of all, they said that some of their users don't want new features every 3 months. And the other thing is that they found that their quality assurance had loads of pressure, because testing OpenOffice, it's a very big application and it takes quite a bit of time. So they're moving to 6 monthly releases and with updates in the middle, with bug fixes. Then there is Plone. They have moved to time-based, or currently moving to time-based. They haven't really succeeded so far. But basically, with their 2.1 release, which was delayed, there was one reason for moving to something else. So in the past, releases took a long time to get out. Again, there were many changes, there were some transition, some upgrade problems, and the unpredictability was very bad because many Plone developers work as web developers and they didn't know which version of Plone to use for their next commercial product. So now they have implemented better development structures, they have implemented deadlines, and they say that it motivates developers. But it's really too early to tell whether Plone has successfully implemented time-based release management. It's just too early. But one thing is interesting. Another reason why Plone said that they want to move to 6-monthly releases is because they want to tie themselves closer to SOAP, which they build upon. So they said if they follow the same release cycle, then they can use the new features of SOAP directly in the new version of Plone. And I think that's an interesting point. On the other hand, it can be quite dangerous because if SOAP is delayed, then you can't release the new version of Plone either. But that's something which you really have to look at in more detail. It's too early. X.org with 7.0, they moved to time-based releases, again, 6 months. The first one was done in 5 months, and then there was a delay. It was 9 months. X.org has a long history because of X386, from which it forked. So X386 had very infrequent releases. There was no plan, and the structures were very rigid. It was very hard to get things done. A problem is that the code base, it's just really huge. And for them, they found that it's very hard to find new people to get involved who download that big package and actually test it. So what they did was they decided to move from that monolithic system to a modular system. They split it up. And what that allowed them to do in terms of release management is to have 2 different release management strategies. So they have the different components which can be released individually whenever they want to. And then the project has so-called roll-up releases where all those components get basically put together into one official release. And the nice thing of that is that if one individual component is not ready, they can simply take the previous version of that. And that's possibly in X.org because the interfaces are fairly stable. So they actually have a fallback mechanism, which is really good. An outstanding problem is that they still need to define interfaces between the server and the graphics drivers so they can update those drivers more frequently. So in those 7 projects, I think there have been a number of very similar problems, like delays, problems of because of long release cycles, there have been many features, many changes, which are very hard to test. There has been the problem of vendors not being able to work together because it was so unpredictable. And I think the fundamental problem of why those problems occur is related to the way free software development works and the way and that is quite incompatible with how release management works, because free software development usually works that people simply do something very independently. They have an interest, I want to implement this feature, and they simply go off and do that feature, and when they're done, they come back. And it happens with very little coordination. You don't have to tell people, please implement that feature, because they do whatever they're interested in anyway. But the problem is that during release management, you need all of those people to finish their work at the same time. But because those people do their whatever they want to independently, someone might be just finishing a feature, while another one might be just starting a new feature. And so the problem is that you have those different development streams, which are at different stages. And then, because there is no plan, there is no schedule, no development plan, at some point the release manager says, I think it's time to make release. And so you have those different streams, and then you say, here there is a cutoff date. And then some people who will just have completed their features will say, that's great, I'm done. But other people will say, but I still need those 2 weeks to get it done. And if you wait, or if there's a delay, then other people will say, oh, but now I'm just getting my feature done, I can still include it. And so people try to push in their features, and then there are delays. And there is again delays, so people push in more stuff. And if there are many delays, then people don't know when the next version will be. Maybe it's going to be 3 years. So obviously I need to get it in now. So there are lots of problems because of that unexpected call for aligning the different work. So time-based releases, what are they? So like I said before, instead of taking features, the basic idea is to take time. We make a release on this day. Today, in 6 months, or today in 12 months, there will be a release. And now everyone can go off, do their own feature development, and they know exactly when they have to come back in order to make that release. You can define a cutoff date. On this date, you have to be ready, then we can test it, and then we can release it. If it's done, it will be included. Otherwise, there are so many months until the next release. It's quite simple. There are some misconceptions about time-based releases. I've listed two here. So some people say, well, but if you define a date, what if something is broken on this date? You can't simply release. Of course you can't. It's just about the orientation. What's the goal of making the release? Having that release target. But obviously, if something is broken, if there is a security or other serious problem, you need to wait. You don't have to release on that specific date. It can slip by a few days. It's just about having a plan, which you usually don't have with feature development, because you simply don't know who will write which feature, and you can't force anyone because they're volunteers. And the other thing is, people say, well, if we make a release every 6 months anyway, why should I do any work? So the answer to that is, well, first of all, people will want to do work, but the other thing is that you can still plan to have features. The only thing you can't do is to wait for those features. But obviously, it still makes sense to have a roadmap and to plan to have those features. So what kind of conditions are necessary? I don't think that time-based releases work for every project. I think that it doesn't work for small projects. And the reason is the first one here. In order to have time-based releases, which means you make release according to a specific interval, you need to actually have enough work done during an interval to warrant a new release. If there is no work, well, don't make a release. But if you look at large projects with hundreds of people, you see that, you know, there's always so much work that yes, it makes sense to release that, even if it's just bug fixes or smaller features. The other thing is that distribution has to be cheap. I mentioned before that in the past, companies sold their software as a product in a shop, and that makes distribution very expensive. You really need a good reason in order to put a new product or a new version of your product into a shop. But if you just distribute it over the internet, it's very easy to give those new versions to people. The other thing is that releases don't have to require specific functionality. Some companies might have agreements where they say the next version will have this feature, or again, because they are selling a product in a shop, they need to have those features. But in free software development, no one's going to sue you if you don't have those new features. It's just whatever gets done, gets done. So I think what time-based releases is quite suitable for is, so in the past, software was sold as a product, but nowadays there is a move towards a service-based industry where you're not selling the software, but you're selling services, the updates, for example. And if you're charging for updates, well, then it's a good idea. If there are regular releases, it's great. If you have something, a new update every 6 months, that's something which customers will appreciate. And it doesn't need to have that new feature, even if it just fixes bugs, that's great. The last condition is that the project has to be modular. And the reason for that is because if the project is not modular and there is a problem, you can't release it. But if it's modular, then you can simply either remove that module, or you can downgrade it and use the last version, as I've shown in the example of X.org. So I think that's quite important as well. So now I'm basically going to argue why time-based releases work better than feature-driven development in large free software projects. And the reason why I think they work is because time-based releases give you two different coordination mechanisms, regularity and the use of schedules. Regularity has, in my opinion, three different points. The first one is that it allows you to create a reference point. So I said before that development, people simply go off and do whatever they do, and then they come back. But the problem is that their changes might conflict with other people's changes. So at some point you need to look at the whole system to see what has changed. And if you make regular releases, then those releases are exactly that reference point where basically people go off and then they come back to the release, integrate everything, and everyone knows, okay, that's the official version. And now again I can go off and do whatever I want to. The other thing is that having those regular releases allows you to create discipline and self-restraint. If those releases are not too far apart, if you know there is a release every 6 months or 9 months, then if you don't make this release, if your feature is not ready, it's not a disaster. You just have to wait another 6 months. It allows you to simply, you know, sit back and say, I will need to get it in now, I can wait. And that makes it much easier for the project as a whole to actually meet their target. The other thing is that making regular releases creates familiarity. In many projects, doing a release is something very unusual. You're used to doing development, but that release thing, that's something you don't do very often. But if you do it, you know, every 6 months, it's just something which is part of your process. It's something you don't have to think about anymore. It's just something you do. You know how to do it. So the second coordination mechanism is a schedule. If a large free software project is feature-driven, it can't really have a schedule because the completion of features is unpredictable. You don't know with volunteers whether anything gets done. So you can't make a plan. But if you use time, then you can make a really good plan. You can say, on this day we will make a release. We need so much time to test it. We need so much time to do the release. We have so much time for people to change the library. We have so much time to change the documentation. And you can actually make a plan. And what that schedule gives people is the information to work independently. So if you don't have a plan, because there are always dependency, a translator can only do their work when the documentation is written. The documentation can only be written when the features are stable. So in the past, if there's no plan, people always have to talk to each other and they need to talk to the release manager. So when are we going to release? And so have you completed that feature already? It doesn't seem to be power. But if you can have a schedule, then you can basically hard code that information. And what that means is that it reduces coordination that is needed. So in the past, release managers would effectively have to tell everyone, well, now it's the time, you have to be done. But that schedule, you can basically tell all those hundreds of people, here's the plan. The plan tells you when you have to be done. Go off with the plan and come back when you're done. And then people will independently come and say, oh, here is this feature, let's integrate it. And if they do it before the cutoff date, and if they meet certain criteria, like it actually works, then it can be included. And that basically solves the whole problem of how do we get all of those people to be ready at the same time. Well, we simply give them the information so they know when to be ready. So what are the incentives for time-based releases? The great thing is time-based is good for everyone. So I've listed four stakeholders here. One are like organizations. If you have 1,000 machines or 10,000 machines, you want to upgrade them. You really care about predictability. You want to know when the new version will be there. Time-based releases gives you that. Users, they get periodical fixes and they have smooth upgrades because they have a small upgrade every now and then instead of having that big bang release in 3 years, which changes everything. For developers, they know when they have to get their code in order to make the release. And if the interval isn't too far away, their code actually gets out to people. You don't have to wait 3 years, or potentially 3 years. Maybe it will be only 1 year, but maybe because of delays it will be longer. You actually know, if I do something, it will be out. I can give my friends that CD and say, I have done that. And for vendors, it's great because it allows them to plan and to work together with other vendors and the community. You don't need to backport fixes anymore. You can simply work on the official tree. So some specific advantages for developers. It creates discipline, not something like bureaucracy, bad thing, but something like more relaxed development because everything has some kind of order, you know when things get done. It allows better planning. It leads to better feedback because you're much in closer contact with users, and it might also contribute to motivation because you see your features being released. So if a project wants to move to time-based releases, obviously one question is, well, what kind of release interval? Should I release every 3 months, every 6 months, or maybe every 3 years, which would be a regular release as well, at least according to some definitions. The other thing is, time-based doesn't mean that you need to take the same interval all the time. You could say, well, this time we will make 9 months, and then 3 months, and 3 months, and then 9 months. That would be possible in theory. I don't think it's a good idea, though. I think regularity and predictability are a good thing. I think that you've seen that many projects use 6 months. I don't think that's a coincidence. But the great thing about 6 months is that it will happen in the same... it will just happen the same like the same thing will happen every year. You will do your release in, say, March and September, and the next year it's again March and September. If it was 7 months, it would always change, and at some point you would face Christmas. Should I do a release during Christmas? And projects have found that, well, that's actually not a good idea because people aren't there. So I think it makes sense to have the same release cycle because people get familiar with it. It's just the same thing. It's so easy. It's just like getting up and brushing your teeth. You don't have to think about it. It's just very easy. The other thing you have to think about are like user requirements. So if there are, if it's a server, if it's software for servers, you might need a different release cycle to something for desktops, or maybe not. It's something to think about. Another thing is commercial interests. So when OpenOffice discussed moving to 3 months, one argument against it was that it's very bad for book authors, because if you write a book, it will be out of date before it's published if there is a release every 3 months. And book authors are actually really important in that whole ecosystem, because they provide a bridge between users and developers. So it's something which should be taken into consideration. Then there are also a number of cost factors related to releasing. You can't release every day, at least not stable releases. For example, because old versions have to be supported. There are fixed costs associated with releasing. You actually need to test it. You need to make tarball. You need to ship it. You need to write a press release, things like that. There might be confusion among users, because they install something from their distro and then they go to your website and you have already released a new version. There might be a fragmentation of users. It might be very hard to keep track of bugs if there are so many releases out there. And then there are also upgrade costs. You can't upgrade every 6 months if you have like 10,000 machines. So there are a number of things that need to be taken into consideration. The last thing are network effects, that there are positive effects if many different projects do the same thing. So you've seen that many projects use 6 monthly releases, and if a distro, and there are some distros which also release every 6 months, which means that if you can release just before, maybe a month before the distro releases, it means that the latest software you release will be part of the distro, which means it gets out to users much more quickly. So I think there is good reason that so many projects use 6 months. One final question will be actually implementing change. It's very hard for a large project to say, well, let's just do a different release strategy. There really has to be a good reason. So all of the projects I mentioned, they really had severe problems with their release management strategy, and that's the reason why they chose to change it. There are questions of control and trust, like who has control? Is there one person who can say what the release strategy will be, or do many people have to agree? It's very important to have policies. You can't just say, from now on we will make a release every 6 months and expect people to do it. You need policies to support that. So one thing is to guarantee the stability of the development tree. Another thing would be to have feature proposals, where people have to write up a proposal if they wanted to make major changes, which allows you to have a much more controlled development. And the other thing would be to actually define milestones and deadlines. And the other thing is that even though I'm arguing the time-based releases allows a project to reduce coordination, it's still needed to coordinate people. The release management manager can't expect people to just do everything automatically. They need to ask people and remind people that something needs to be done. So I think the GCC example is a great example of what happens if the release manager is busy. Well, nothing happens, because people won't fix bugs. They will simply develop new features, which is what happened in the 4.2 example, GCC. So to come to an end, I think what can be said is that some of those projects
by changing the release strategy, they really reacted to changes in their environment. So if you have a project with two people, well, you don't need a big release management strategy. You can just talk to each other and say, well, I'm done, what about you? But if suddenly, instead of having two people, you have 200 or 2,000 people, the same thing doesn't work anymore. And I think that's what some projects have seen, that they suddenly had loads of problems because they were so much bigger. And by implementing time-based release management, they moved to a strategy which is more appropriate for their size. The other thing, it might be more appropriate for their users. In the past, if you put out the development version, most users would simply install it because users were very technical. But nowadays, there are real end users who have different needs. And time-based releases addresses some of those needs better than other strategies. So like I said, I believe that time-based releases are effective because they use two coordination mechanisms. That regularity, which means that people get familiar, it creates a reference point, and it's just part of the process. And having that schedule, which gives people that information they need to do their work independently without much coordination. What I've also, something which goes beyond free software is that I think some of those insights can be applied to other projects. Essentially what I've looked at is at how do projects work which have very little control over their contributors. And that's very similar in other volunteer projects which don't write software. And I think that some of the things we've learned here can be implemented in other volunteer projects. But I don't have any experience in that. But I hope someone will pick that up. So finally, there is some information on the web. I actually put the whole dissertation online in case people want to read it. And it's actually fairly readable for a PhD. I guess that's actually a big criticism that it's not scientific enough. You can actually read it. And obviously, you're welcome to ask questions now.
I'd actually begin by pointing out you were, in fact, saying that, okay, this is about free software projects. I've spent 25 years working in proprietary software companies with sort of random sporadic breaks to do other things, and actually pretty much everything you've said is just as applicable there, mm-hmm. if only for the boringly simple reason that, well, it's related to managing software, but managing software engineers is like herding cats, which I'm sure you're familiar with. But actually, if you can let programmers have more of a sense of what's going on, they work better. And so, you know, the fact that they can see where the next release is going to be and that their work is actually going to show up somewhere motivates them. That's independent of whether it's voluntary or paid work. The fact that they aren't quite sure whether they should do this piece of work now or the risk of causing instability is too great so they shouldn't. I mean, I've been in that situation enough times where I've been aware that what I want to do will break things. And I've said to the project manager, when is your next release due? Because if it's too soon for me to stabilise this, I will not do it until after your release. And they've said, oh, it's next week. And 6 months later, he's still saying, oh, it's next week. And, you know, I have tended to be restrained and wait until the next release. But generally, immediately after the next release, I do 7 extremely dangerous things, break everything, and that way he can't complain about me doing it a week before the release. For the next project cycle. And all of those things, I think, must apply just as readily to both open and closed development. So I think really a great deal of what you're saying is has broader reach than you have claimed. Mm.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, I specifically looked at free software, but I'm sure that many of those problems you can find it anywhere. The other thing which I believe is that as software is more moving away from product to like service industry, I think the question of time-based releases is going to be more important in proprietary software as well. But that's an area which I didn't study explicitly.
Okay. You're saying that this applies to large open source software projects. Do you have any indications for where's the point that you should go from feature-driven, you know, two developers, five, ten? So where's the point you should move to time-based? Do you have any idea?
It's a good question. I don't really have an answer. Something which I used during my research as sort of as a definition, what is a large and what is a small project anyway. One thing which I used, but I'm not sure if it's ideal, but it's something which I used. It's basically when you have specialized roles, the question is, do you have a specific release manager? That would be something which usually you can find in a large project, but I know it's not ideal. The other question is whether there would be some strategy in between, which would be appropriate for like middle-sized projects. I think it's something which I can't answer. I think the general answer would be that at that point where not every developer knows each other and where you can't actually all talk to each other, I think this might be the point where it might make sense to look at something different.
So three people.
But I mean, I guess another question would be, can the release manager actually look at every change that's being made and coordinate with everyone? And if that's very hard to do, then time-based release management gives them a way to, you know, decentralize some of that. I know it's not the most satisfying answer, but it's something which I don't really know. I think that's something we will also see in like in experience. I think there are many more projects which are going to be bigger and which are going to have problems, and then we can see at what kind of, you know, size or what kind of other factors are related to specific problems. But I guess a good sign is that if there are problems, then you probably need to change something.
There are also some parts of your recipe that work just fine for any size project. Modularity is always good. It's precisely because if you realize you've just broken module A, well, you've still got the last release of module A, and you can use that until you've recovered. Mm-hmm. And if everything else is insensibly developed, then the rest of your modules can survive with that module that module on an old version until it's not broken anymore.
Mm-hmm. So
even small projects that works for.
I don't think time-based is a solution for everything. I think it really doesn't work for small projects. It's just overkill. But yeah, we definitely need more experience. I mean, there are many questions. What I've shown some, like for example, with choosing a interval, I mean, I've listed some of the factors, but they're not complete. There are many more. But the question is, how do you actually implement a new release strategy? Another thing which I did mention here, but which I've covered in some detail in my thesis, was like tools, infrastructure, which you need to implement to help release management. So some people use Bugzilla with like to track their releases, but there isn't any great tool. There are different ways of doing things, and even just documenting that helps. But it's also the question of how can you improve the tools, and that's really an open question.
It's worth doing. I've worked in a project for a company a few years ago which had a whole complicated ISO 9001 process. Thankfully, one of the well-designed forms, which was developer-led rather than management consultant-led ISO 9001 processes. And I was responsible for looking after the tools for that project, and indeed for making sure that the tools seduced the developers into doing it right,
mm-hmm.
Which made it a great deal easier.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much to to do release management, but principally, from my point of view, just to keep the quality acceptable, because I hate fixing bugs, and if I can make the developers actually test their software before releasing it, then I don't have to come and fix it, because I'm usually in maintenance in one way or another. That's what happened to the old. But it did make it easier for the project managers, because they could have more clarity about things being sensible.
Well, it's certainly the case that tools have such a big impact. If you just look at how version control systems have completely changed free software development in the last few years. For example, in the past, actually making development releases was really important, but nowadays people don't really care so much, because just use latest SVN or something like that. And I agree, it's much easier to convince developers to use a tool than to adopt the process. So if you can, you know, implement it in the tool so people don't realize that they're actually following a really good process, it would be great. But it's not something I looked at.
One thing you mentioned partly with the GNOME example is the possible problem of making radical changes in a project. Do you think time-based releases will block radical changes from happening, for like doing completely redesigns of APIs or layering or implementing a completely cut-through feature change in a project?
Well, possibly yes. I mean, that's something, again, we need more experience with. I think that in the case of GNOME, many of those features, because people ask, so what should that 3.0 actually be? And many people didn't actually know. And many of the things which people said are features which have been implemented in the meantime, because you don't need to do it within one interval. You can do it on a branch. And the question of, well, how would you rewrite the whole application? The question is whether that's a good thing anyway. But apart from that, I think that even in that case, you would have to supply regular updates while you make that rewrite. Because what usually happens is, if you say, well, we will simply stop making updates because that rewrite is only going to take 4 months, and so we can have a release in 6 months, and then it's going to take 3 years. It's just the way it always works that you know, you say we can make it and then you don't. So one example is like Perl, where they've been talking about Perl 6 for like years. And in the meantime, people have moved to Python, have moved to Ruby and to whatever. And very few people are really excited about Perl anymore. But I wonder what would have happened if they had kept going updating Perl 5 and maybe putting new features into Perl 5. KDE is another example, where KDE 4 is announced and it's going to be a big change, but again, the question is whether they're going to make it on time. So I think that's something which is still open. I think that you can make some changes. Obviously, there are some restrictions, but I think that's a good idea anyway, because if you don't have those restrictions, then you might just go off and change everything and never have anything stable again.
You can also make radical change in a large project if you approach it with thought and care. The ways I've seen it done successfully have revolved around having modules that have got, typically the module, in order to achieve a radical change, you have relevant modules go into two branches, and the two branches retain as much API compatibility as they can, and they have suitable hash ifdefs to let themselves diverge, and the clients of that code uses the right hash ifdef to select which version of the API they're calling. Mm-hmm. And then everything can move progressively, and most people aren't using the new code, but the developers on the new code branch test against everything else, and they can verify that it all works and pick up bugs until it's all ready and working, and then they can go, okay, flip the switch. See what's broken in your project, tell us about it, we'll fix it. And then, of course, you unflip the switch for your release, because it's not ready yet. But so you can make those kinds of transition if you're careful about conditional compilation and similar manoeuvres, just to provide the stepping stones between the old and the new. And that's not too hard. So I don't really think GNOME's doomed to never have a radical change just because of a release schedule. If it doesn't do good project management internally, then it's doomed. That's another matter.
Maybe. Just imagine Debian replacing the Linux kernel with something that's not Unix compatible because the API is a lot better. That would be a large change. Could it happen? I'm not sure.
There's a question.
Actually, it's more of an elaboration on what you all already said, because like you have the question whether GNOME will ever release 3.0. You also have the same question whether Linux will ever release 2.7 or 2.8 or 3.0. And it seems that consensus is that no, actually, with the current release module, at least for the foreseeable future, we are able to get in all the features we need and want. So it seems that for some projects, at least, time-based release management is able to incorporate those major changes. And there's been a lot of major changes during the 2.6 series of the Linux kernel.
Yeah. I mean, the kernel is certainly an example where like they're really changing loads of things, and it's possible, like for example, the rewrite of the wireless stack, I think, is going to be added for the next release, or at least they're discussing it. Again, it was developed outside, and now it's being integrated. Again, there are some things which are hard to do, and the Linux kernel is also breaking loads of stuff, so I don't think it's the ideal example, but it's certainly one example of major changes are possible. And the other question which you raised about the 2.7, I think that's interesting as well. Where is all of that going? Has that software reached such a maturity that they can simply go on and don't have to change that radically? The other thing with GNOME 3.0 is that if there was something really radically new, then maybe it wouldn't be called GNOME, it would be called something else, but it would use the same technology. So for example, the One Laptop Per Child project has a new interface called Sugar, which is based on GNOME, but which looks very different. Or if you use the Nokia device, again, it's using GNOME, but it has a completely different environment, interface. So maybe that's the old projects will continue, and if there's really such a radical change, it would be a fork or a new project. But it really depends, I think, on the situation, how big the change is really going to be, and how the community works.
More questions? Comments? No? And I want to say thank you very much. Da går vi videre ned på Aker Brygge. Jeg tror vi skal tusle til Rorbua, der vi forhåpentligvis skal finne et litt lengre bord. Jeg vet ikke hvor mange som blir med, men vi får håpe å finne plass til alle sammen. Ja.